Well, welcome back to the Line Between, a Pardesi podcast with your lovely favorite host, Alisa, and
Kip King. I mean, favorite is a stretch, but we're joined by not just us sitting at home today, where would be amazing Kisnuka,
yes,
who is going to be chatting about all things music and identity, culture, everything in between. So straight over to you to introduce.
So we are joined here today by Kisnuka. She's a globally award-winning artist, producer, activist, everything under the sun, with a wealth of experience working in both Western and South Asian, in both Western and South Asian music industry. She's truly one of the coolest. So I really hope everyone takes a chance after this episode to really kind of listen into whatever she's doing. My personal favorite right now is A.O. Byrne. I'm not going to lie. I've been listening that a little bit on repeat today.
Nice.
I think the first... I truly was like, wow, really calling out every single person under the sun. But yeah, it's really amazing. Your EP has also been out for a couple of months. So welcome to our little corner of the internet, Kiss. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. Super nice.
Well, we're very glad to have you. So just to kick things off, you combine a lot of different creative elements to create a really true audiovisual kind of musical experience. How exactly did you develop your current style as it is?
It hasn't really been like a concerted effort to find a style. I feel for me, I've just done so many things over the years that who I am today is this amazing blend of, you know, all of my lived experiences, all the kind of work that I've done. I worked in film, I worked in the commercial industry, I did some television, I grew up listening to rock and roll, I was raving in Goa at all the psychedelic dance parties, you know, and I was playing the piano, I started editing, and all of these things have informed the work that I'm producing now. And I find it actually super difficult to separate myself, you know, my life and my experiences from my art. It's all kind of the same. So there, I don't know about a style, but it's definitely, when you see my work, you know what I'm thinking at the moment. It's super clear.
As a peek into your brain, just opening it up into your brain, into your creative mind. I love it.
And kind of similar to that, you touched on it, like with artists who put so much of their identity and soul into their work, how important is it for them to find a signature style, quote unquote, if it is at all important?
I think one of the most important things that I learned quite late was that I needed to spend time with myself, you know, to really understand, to really listen to the what was inside me, you know. And the thing is that there's so much noise and so many people who, well-meaning people who give you advice and who love you and people who have, based on their experiences of life and their perspective, you know, have ideas about how you can do things. And then you see things on the internet, you see, you know, there are other artists. It's a lot, there's a lot of input. And I feel like, especially now in the last 10 years, I think that artists don't really have the time to be alone, and it's super important to spend that time with yourself, because that's when, you know, you hear everything, you have all the inputs, and now you need time to like assimilate, assess, distill everything, and then find what your voice really is, you know, who you really are. And it's not just about artists. I think this is for, you know, this is for every human being across the board. Like, you really need to know who you are. To know who you are, you need to spend time with yourself.
That's true.
With any, yeah. And I think that's how you will find who you are, and then how you want to tell your story becomes, you know, the expression of who you are becomes the art that you make or the work that you produce, or how you experience people and interact, you know, in the world. And then that becomes your style. I also think, I mean, I don't want to say it like this because you can also cater it. You can also be like super specific. You can also design something based on what you like. And I think that's really amazing. Strategy is really important, you know, educating yourself, looking at what's out there. But first you need to know, like the most important thing you need to know is who you are. And then all of the stuff you can develop.
It all just kind of falls into place afterwards.
And I think that's really interesting because now with so much social media and so much kind of stimulation around, it must be even harder to kind of force yourself to be alone
with
your own creative process and not kind of be subconsciously influenced by really other cool people, even though like you might be inspired. I can imagine it's been,
It's nice to be, art is all about inspiration, whether it's from people, whether it's from experiences, whether it's from nature, whether it's whatever it is, it all art is inspired. It's just what you make of it. You know, something inspires you and then what is it that you make of it? Because that's when you make it your own. We can all look at the same picture and then feel, you know, different.
Feel lots of different things, yeah. Art is very subjective. Did you have like a very specific moment in like taking that time for yourself that was like that kind of eureka, I feel like this is the path for me?
It was forced.
It always is.
It always is. When is it not forced?
I when I was in my early 20s, I didn't wanna, I was gigging everywhere. I was traveling around the world, but I never wanted to travel alone. And then slowly, again, it was by accident, I landed up in Sri Lanka, and then I found a dog that had its paw broken, and then I ended up staying there for a month by myself, and it opened my eyes, you know, and I was like, oh my God, I never want to travel with anyone again. I just want myself. It's amazing. It was like, oh, a whole new world. And then that was really the beginning of my relationship with myself, to spend time alone with myself, and I started to really enjoy it. But it was really during the pandemic where there was that the real moment of,
and it's the real moment you had to sit down, really think about, spend time alone with your thoughts.
By no, you mean the joy of being alone. I feel like, not to make it like that, it's such an earth sign thing. So. Oh, we said I can't start it. You're like,
we are both earth signs as well.
We love being alone.
I think it's super important, you know. Like I was reading this about children as well, that parents also need to learn how to leave kids alone. You need to leave people alone, and then I also read all the stuff like I watched something where someone was talking about how important it was to be bored. You know, that when you're bored is really when your brain actually activates and starts to shine, you know, things to make, you know, the time interesting. And that's how you come up with ideas. And I'm saying this, like, I overstimulate my brain. I have this super bad habit when I want to take a break. I watch Netflix on my phone. First of all, really bad.
We all do it.
Without headphones, about, you know, just while I'm watching headphones, now you can like, you know, sort of swipe it up and it becomes a little small screen.
Yes. The screen and screen, yeah.
I'm you know, doing crossword puzzles at the back while it's overstimulation for my brain, you know? And I recognize it and I speak of it. So I think it's really it's a practice to be alone and to be bored, working on it.
No, that's very true. I feel like that kind of picture-in-picture overstimulation, I think, is a very kind of this sign of the times. I think everybody kind of does that. They need to have one screen doing this, one screen doing that, one screen doing this. And it's the only way they feel like they can fully concentrate. I do this as well. I do that as well at work. Like, I'll have my phone on.
I'm doing that right now. This is, you're on a small screen for me.
There's Netflix playing, someone's playing Subway Surfers. Like, it's, we need the full kind of stimulation. But it is really important. I definitely agree. It is very important to kind of take that time for yourself, because it doesn't only apply, I guess, in music. I guess it applies even in your personal life. You need that time to figure out who you are before you can you let alone become friends with someone else, let alone figure out where your life is going. But like, that's obviously the kind of later stage. How did you get started with music, DJing, all of this in the first place? Was that something you've been doing since you were a kid?
Yeah, I don't DJ. I only play my own music. I play live electronic. But I was playing piano when I was really young. My parents were playing music all the time while I was growing up. They had like, they spent a lot of money collecting music. They were like super into rock and roll. So that's all I heard when I was growing up. And it really is it's like the base of like how I feel about music, you know, like distorted guitars, like warm, grungy bass lines. And I can hear it in my sound now, you know. So, and my parents were super encouraging. They spent so much money, bought me a secondhand piano, and my mom used to take me for classes like 1 hour away and then wait in the car for 1 hour while I would do the class and then drive me back home. And they were super encouraging. But I never thought that music would be a professional choice. It just happened by accident. And then I just went with the flow. Life kind of brought me to it. And then I was kind of taking it easy through the years, just, you know, doing what was coming and enjoying myself, having an amazing time, learning on the job. But now, I don't know where else I would rather be. I think I'd make a great travel agent. But we're good at like booking
tickets. That sound amazing.
You know, and I know that if I put my mind to something, I can do it. But I think that life kind of brought me to it. I trust the universe.
Trust in life. Trust in the universe.
Yeah.
Everything has a way of working itself out the way that it's supposed to. I really do. I definitely agree with that.
And you get, I think life kind of, this is one of my most, I think I've told the story so many times, but I think it's amazing. It's like, life always gives you super clear, like, you know, that like your the opportunity, and it's really up to you to be like open and aware to read the signs. It's I've told the story so many times, but I want to tell it again. It's the red jeans, blue jeans story. Okay, so it's like, so I have to go out to a party, and I am like, you know what? I'm gonna wear the red jeans. I don't have red jeans, what I'm just saying. I want to wear the red jeans. And then I think, actually, I can wear the blue jeans too. Yeah, but I want to wear the red jeans. And then I have a shower and I come out and I start looking for the red jeans and I can't find them anywhere. But I find the blue jeans and I'm like, oh, well, I thought I was, yeah, I mean, I was thinking that I could wear, but no, I want to look for the red jeans. And then I spend like 45 minutes looking for the red jeans. Now I'm sweating. It didn't matter that I took a shower. I mean, when the blue jeans were there all along, you know? And so I think that life also kind of makes things like where you need to be, just it makes it smoother, you know?
It does. It
becomes sort of easier for when I know that if I'm doing something and I'm banging my head against the wall and it's not working, I take a step back and I say like, okay, I'm not going to do this. Just for the moment, I'm going to pause and I'm going to kind of, and that's why I feel like music kind of just, you know, it's just happened.
Seemingly, I think that's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That's an advice I've heard, that when it's meant to be, or it automatically feels easier and it doesn't feel like something's blocking. Not to say hard work doesn't go into it.
But of course.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And then kind of linked to that, like we always say that art transcends boundaries and barriers and languages. You talked a lot about like your upbringing and obviously all this traveling now. Do you think that kind of your identity and where it's kind of grown to comes across in your work, and how does it do that?
It's really interesting because I've had this kind of like growing up here in India. My parents are super cool and really, and I'm super lucky. They're very progressive. They both of them traveled a lot, you know, so they've always been really open-minded. You know, the conversation has always been like, it's always been open. But I always remember wanting to break all the rules, you know? I was like, I'm not going to learn how to cook.
No, obviously not.
You know? Now I just started cooking now because I'm living in Spain on and off, and it's like you have to do it, and I'm enjoying it so much.
Life scale, yeah.
Amazing. It's like another creative outlet and I enjoy it so much. But I was just like, I'm not gonna do it. And then when I started to make music at the beginning, when I was traveling abroad, people were always telling me like, oh, you know, why don't you put some Indian elements into your sound? You know, like, why don't you put like a sitar? I was just like, just because I'm,
no.
Yeah, you know, he don't shove my culture down my throat, you know?
Yeah.
And I actually, it took me some time to realize that when I was able to come back to understand like my culture and my roots on my own terms, it was amazing.
You appreciate it a lot more, I imagine.
It was amazing, and it is amazing. And I don't need to try now to you know, insert my culture into my music, for example, or into like my storytelling. It's who I am, so it's there, you know. And I'm really proud, and I'm super grateful that I was able to find it and to come to it on my own terms. And I think that, you know, this whole question of identity, I think you can't help where you were born. You don't choose your parents. You know, you are a product of the environment that you grow up in, and your identity is influenced by all of those things. You know, what I think is the most important thing is, because you can have like two people in the same situation and both of them can like turn out completely different, you know. So I think it's really how you understand, like, and take the time to understand where you come from on your own terms and in your own way. And I think that that's forms for me the basis of identity. And I think that you can hear it in my music, and you can, you know, it's in the videos that I make, it's all there.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Honestly, I feel, sorry, no, go ahead, Kate.
No, I was just going to say that like Alisa and I have also had very kind of similar upbringings as each other, that
yes.
We didn't grow up in the country that we were born in / where we're from, but then moved so often that it felt like there's really, this is very existential, but there's no real home, or you don't have the same way of connecting to a country the way that maybe your peers have. So, and I totally agree. I think people push to kind of categorize you by saying, oh, like, what are you? Which culture do you define the most with? And I think that rebellious nature of like, none of them, that's not me. But it comes with time.
No, and it definitely does. And it's exactly what you said, that like, I think it's really the whole basis of Pradesi as a platform. That's what we really wanted to do, that all of us working on this team, is that we've all had that kind of experience where we didn't really want to have people tell us on how South Asian we are and what kind of South Asian we are. And we, I think, all have gone through that kind of villain arc, is that origin story about us being like, no, I don't want to be brown, I don't want to be Desi, I don't want to be Indian, I don't want to be Pakistani, whatever it is. And we all kind of come out of that on the other end on our own terms, being like, this is great, our culture is beautiful, and we implement it in our own ways however we can. And I mean,
we don't judge others for how they do it. That's something that needs to be said in that generation.
Yes, that is something that's recent.
I have been thinking about this quite a lot, you know, because I do have friends here who are artists who are not from here, but they're, you know, they have Indian parents. And I have been thinking how hard it would be to, for example, being born in a place where you probably think and feel like everyone else, but you don't look like everyone else, you know. And then when you meet the people who you look like, you don't think like them, you know, and you don't speak like them. And I was thinking, because I was thinking about this about a friend of mine, and I was thinking how hard it could be to be in between places, you know, and where is home? Like, where do you really feel that, like, you belong? And I think that it's quite, this is where community comes in. This is where, you know, having like that kind of a support system and
yeah.
But I can imagine that it could be tough, especially when you're younger.
Yeah, no, it is a little bit tough. I think both Kitki and I had that exact experience. I mean, my family is originally Pakistani, but I did not grow up in Pakistan. I grew up kind of everywhere, so I had that exact experience of being around people who didn't really look like me. Yeah. But people from back home were like, "You're not really Pakistani." Yeah. So
it's like not being accepted as either, because yeah. I still, like, my first language is Marathi. I grew up in Pune, Mumbai, and we'd go back, but I wasn't considered Maharashtrian or Indian, so I don't. So, yeah.
But how do you How do you feel about it? How do you feel about it now? How do you approach
now? I'm definitely in a much better space. And I think now it's exactly what you said about community. That I think once you build that kind of community of other people like you, I think that really helps. I think if you grow up in a space where you are still the only one that kind of looks like you, then you find it very, very difficult to kind of maintain that kind of sense of identity that, like, yes, I am South Asian, but I can also be something else. It's very difficult to kind of, I think, manage that. Whereas I think if you're around people, like, now I've made the effort to kind of meet more other South Asians, meet other South Asian diasporas, meet other kind of Pakistanis as well. I think that's really helped. I'm not perfect. I think everybody's on their own kind of identity journey, however long that takes. Yeah.
And I feel like something that comes up, sorry, just echoing off Elisa's thing, is that when you have a sibling who have attached to the new culture that you're living in differently, or you have friends who do it differently, it kind of adds to that compounding feeling that, like, you know, when you're younger, you have that main character syndrome anyways, where you feel like you are the only person going through open state. So like Elisa said, I think finding a community, whether that's in like a creative community, in like journalism or what BDC does, or just like friends, I think, yeah, we need that help.
There is something though, I feel that a lot of the times what happens is that when people leave their country and they go somewhere, it's almost like being stuck in a time capsule. Because what you experience and what you learn and everything, and then you leave, and that's what you have of home, and that's what you hold on to, and, you know, that's what, how you live. And then your country is changing, you know, the people are changing, everyone's evolving, and I think that you could find that if you came, for example, if you went back to Pakistan, or you came back to India, that there would probably be a lot more people who think and feel exactly how you do. And it's just that it's because we, you know, we, again, the narrative is defined by the people that we're around and the place that we're in. Sometimes it's hard to make that connection, but I mean, the world is super small now.
No, that's true. The world is becoming smaller and smaller, and I feel like people are a lot more accepting and nicer than I think we give them credit for. I think the internet kind of creates this very, like, very hard image that everybody hates each other, everything sucks, everything's awful. But I really think people are much nicer than I think the internet, the dark organization, it gives them credit for, honestly.
But kind of on this, sorry, I'm like jumping, but I think we were discussing this, how important is community for you and finding the people around you, whether they're kind of your own family or friends you meet? Like, why is it so important to create a community at any stage of your life?
I think this is it, you know, it's you, how you feel and maybe what you're going through. And if you know someone else who is as well, it's like, it's nice to be able to support and inform each other, you know. It's what we were talking about. When you're around people who maybe think like you and feel like you, that support is invaluable. And then it's beautiful. I also think, though, that to to have community, to have a community, to have that kind of relationship, you know, with people, you need to be vulnerable. And I think that's one of the most important things, you know, to build community. Like, you need to be vulnerable. You know, you need to ask for help if you need it. You need to be open, and you need to be super compassionate. And I think this is really great, because if community can build compassion, that's really what the whole world needs right now.
Honestly, yeah.
You know, so I think that the idea of I feel like it's even good for the world, like, for people to cultivate the sense of community. Because once you feel like that about, you know, other people, and you have that, you know, those kind of relationships, and you really see that you can have different opinions, and you can have different ways of, you know, solving problems, and you can still function together, and you can still be tolerant, and you can still, you know, you can learn and you can grow. And if community teaches you that, you can just go out into the world and be a better human being.
That's true. Yeah. That's very true.
So it's super important.
No, that's very true. I mean, community definitely gives you kind of the tools to go out into the world and, exactly, you said, be a better person. I mean, do you feel like you have any kind of specific experiences or, like, tips for cultivating that kind of meaningful relationships and partnerships in their community, beyond your community, both professional, personal?
I mean, one thing before you answer, I saw that you got married recently.
Yeah.
Looking at your wedding photos as well. And, no, they were so beautiful. But
stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Kind of something to add.
Yeah, I actually never wanted to get married. And I think if my husband wasn't from another different country, I probably wouldn't have. But it's nice. I'm pleasantly surprised.
I think that's most, I think, South Asian, they see girls and they're like, no, I don't want to get married. I don't want to do this. Very traditional. I'm going to go live my life. Yeah. And then one person will come along and ruin it.
Yeah. Yeah, I learned never to say never, because when you say never, like, the universe is really like, really? Okay, let's see.
Okay, here you go. Here's exactly what you didn't want.
Okay, bad. Yeah. No, I kind of derailed Elisa's original question. I'm sorry. But it was about cultivating meaningful partnerships.
Yeah, relationships, especially in this kind of industry as well. I imagine that's a little bit difficult.
I think the most important thing is, look, actually, when you're in the commercial industry, it's different, because it's, you know, and I've been part of that industry, and it's different, because you're really not in a space where you can be honest and open, because there is a hierarchical structure, and there is a power dynamic, and there is, you know, there's a certain way that industry, that the commercial part of the industry functions. But, like, in the independent music scene, for example, when it really is more about art and what you're doing, as opposed to it being only about numbers, because film and, you know, television, music, it's all a business at the end of the day. So when it's really about art, then you can, none of those rules, of course, you can learn from it and you can apply some of the things. But I think the most important thing, even for personal relationships, is, and I learned this, like, the hard way, is that you can't change people. And that's pretty much it. And then you also understand that as you get older, that you have your own problems. You know, everyone has their thing. And if you learn to accept people as they are, I think it makes, like, navigating those relationships a lot easier. You can also choose to walk away from having someone in your life if you don't like the way that they are, if it bothers you that much. But I think just accepting people for who they are, you know, it's I think probably the most important thing. And I think being honest, you know, being honest, being truthful, whether it's in your working relationships or personal relationships, super important. And everyone always talks about communication. And of course, communication is important. But I think that the thing that people leave out is how you actually communicate. Because it's not just communicating, it's like, how do you communicate?
Yes.
You know, Like,
because everybody has a different way to communicate with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to understand, like, how, what's the best way to get through to this person, you know? What's the best way for me to, if I'm working with a musician, for example, how do I communicate my idea to this musician to get the best out of this musician? Or in a, you know, with my brother, for example, if I'm really upset and I want to, you know, like, I want to say things to him, having the willpower to, or, you know, just to be able to, like, okay, you know, like, or the maturity to hold myself and then understand that if I, you know, I need to say, I need to communicate how I feel in a certain way for it to land on him and to,
yeah.
these things for me are, like, super important, and I'm learning more about communication. The fact that I thought that I communicate super well, but I'm also learning now from my partner that, you know, there is to be able to I have to learn, like, it, there is a, you have to practice this,
yes,
way of communication.
So it's a life skill.
Well, it's so much work, but
more every year.
But yeah, but I think essential.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, communication is very much key. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's something we all have to work on, like, from young to old. I, not to call out anyone, but I do. No, but talking a bit more about your recent actual events and all the exciting stuff you're up to,
yeah.
You recently did your debut Boiler Room set. Just so exciting. What was that like? Like, what were the vibes? How did you prepare? What was the actual experience? Did it live up to kind of what it is?
Yeah, I was playing, like, a brand new set, and I just worked on it in the month before, so I was super nervous, but also I was thinking, like, oh my god, we started talking, Henna, who works with me, she's my friend and she's also managing my work, we were like, oh my god, you know, Boiler Room, we have to think about all these things, like, you need to do your hair, like, we need to do your nails, because they have all these shots where, you know, you can see your hands, and let's think about what we want to wear. In the end, we did nothing, you know. We were just super focused on, like, getting all the, it was like, okay, please, all the gods of technology, like, just please make sure that there are no, like, technical
issues, no thing, yeah.
That's it. That's all. And I'll do the rest, you know.
You don't ask for much.
I'll practice, and I'll put like my 150% into it, but just please, like, no loose cables or, like, you know, something that goes wrong. That's it. So at the end of it was like, it was super cool. I had my family there. I had my friends who I had to emotionally blackmail into coming. Because it was my set was a little bit earlier in the night as well, and my dad was there. My dad was rocking out at the back, and
amazing.
Yeah, you see him actually somewhere at the end. He's like, he's in a white T-shirt.
I'm gonna have to look at that. I'm gonna see some kind of having a time of his life.
It was nice. Yeah, it was actually everything that I hoped that it
would be. That's amazing. I mean, I think trying to plan for hair might have been a little bit ambitious, considering you're moving your head around. We're on everybody a bit sweaty. It all would have fallen out.
You know, like, maybe, like, I could have dyed my hair. There was no dyeing. I was just like,
sure.
I mean, as long as you got the set out, I'm sure you completely rocked it. I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
It's an experience in itself. But I know you're kicking off the South Bank Center's South Asian Festival soon, which is very, very cool. Just basically what prompted, you know, us to meet like this. What are you most excited for with that series?
Honestly, it's really about meeting the community. Because it's like, we're here, and in India, you can, you know, we're like, we have like... like ringside seats to watch, like, everything that's happening, and it really is a moment for the South Asian community, you know. And it's like, it's amazing to see, you know, all the celebration of the community, and to see, like, you know, everyone, like, shining. You can see, like, there's so many more artists, and this it's, I want to meet everyone. I think for me, this is like,
just kind of like happy gathering of family, friends, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I want to, hopefully we'll see you as well.
Yeah, one is crossed.
It would be, it's really just to connect, you know, that would be super nice.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on this already, but like South Asian sound and music and in any capacity, it's like, it feels like it's going global with so many like genres and obviously artists. So, I mean, for you, what do you hope to see in the industry, or what do you hope the next couple of years to look like?
I just wish that governments and art bodies, you know, like people who are in positions of power, can put more money, more funds into growing the community, you know. There are countries that have like specifically like funds for art projects and for, you know, like for artists. I think that that's because everything else is there. The talent is there, the community is there, the people are there, you know, everyone is doing the best that they can. It would be nice to have a little bit of extra help. And I think that that can push things like along.
It's like from grassroots up, right? Like the investment, the support, the mentoring.
Like that, the answer usually,
and it's like that in so many creative industries, that there's always people calling for diversity, inclusion, and change, but it's like, okay, but where's the money? Because all of this takes one day.
It's not for free. We're not just hanging out here singing songs for free.
And empowerment often, and I feel like it sounds crass, but like empowerment is also financial, because without that backing, you're not actually paying fair wages, or you're not really uplifting.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's different when it's the community pulling together and doing things together, you know, and then everyone pitches in and participates, and then that's amazing, and that's already there. It's just for the next step, it could be nice to have some.
What would put me in?
To have some funding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, you have like, you can build programs, you can, you know, you can have like better, bigger shows, you can do, you know, you can put it into education around art. I mean, there's so much that can happen. But yeah,
you think underfunding of the arts is really a big kind of issue, regardless of it being South Asian focused or not South Asian focused? I think arts in general is severely, severely underfunded. I think these days, and people are really not appreciating what really that can mean, especially in the kind of political landscape that the world is kind of turning into. The arts is a really, really important way for people to get their message across and get the feelings of whatever, you know, issues are going on around the world to really connect to other communities, which a simple talking, chatting doesn't really work. Yeah. So in that sense, what does activism mean for you? I mean, you do kind of do a little bit of activism. I know you yourself, and you really kind of implemented in some of your songs. So what does activism mean for you?
Honestly, it's just a way of life. It's like an extension of who I am. I have a quite strong conscience, has a life of its own. And so I really don't have a choice. I feel like, you know, and I'm quite sensitive. So I do feel like a lot of things. I remember one of my friends, not a very good friend, but a friend of a friend, who met me, and he said to me, like, you know, you're like, if it's not like animals, then it's like, you know, whatever, woman empowerment. If it's not woman empowerment, then it's like,
what's wrong with women empowerment?
If it's not, no, he was saying like that. I was saying, talking about all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, like, pick a lane.
Yeah.
You know?
But there are so many lanes to choose from.
But everything is, it's all connected.
Yeah.
Everything is connected. You can't talk about equality and human rights if you don't talk about feminism. You can't really talk about feminism if you don't talk about animal rights, you know, and what happens to animals, like reproductive animals. If you talk about animals, you can't talk about animals without talking about the environment. You can't. It's all connected.
Everything is connected.
What are you doing on this planet? What are you doing?
Yeah, I find it very surprising. People find it difficult to just be a nice human being and just care for something other than themselves.
Yeah. It's
baffling. Yeah. Truly baffling.
I can understand also, I can understand that it can be scary, you know, and there's also like, there's a lot of misinformation and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like, I think something for me that's standard is and it's like something that I live by is that I will always stand on the side of the oppressed, and that's it. And it can be anything, you know, and that's that. And mm-hmm. and because I feel like there's no, artists do have sometimes like a way of presenting themselves, like maybe how they are in reality and then how they actually present themselves. It can be different. And for me, that's not the case. I'm just who I am all the time. And then, although I did have a conversation about this with my partner, and he was saying that it's not true. Everyone wears a mask. And I was like, no, I don't wear a mask. Like, this is who I am. Like, I'm also who I am. And he said, yeah, he's like, the thing is that as soon as there is an observation of you, whether it's your phone or there's another person, it changes you. It's super subtle, but it happens. It's like the double slit experiment, like the electron starts behaving differently because it's being
observed.
And so his argument was that, but I was like, fine, it makes sense what you're saying, but so
you can't admit that you're wrong that quickly. That quickly.
So also like another really important lesson that I'm learning is when I'm wrong and then just suck it up, you know.
Learning to really humble yourself and be like, okay, fine.
I'm not always fine, you know. But
no.
But yeah, I think it's it is kind of I can't separate the two, you know. So it's also interesting because I can really look back at what the work that I produced and see exactly how I was feeling at the time. You know, so then, like, because there's no boundary between how I feel about the world and how I express it through, you know, the work that I do, it's kind of, it's all connected.
Yeah, and it sounds like from what you're saying, it's like a very intersectional approach as well, because you have this, like you were saying, like you can't talk about race without talking about politics, without talking about queer issues or class. And I think it's impossible, especially now with how much education information is out there, to really approach activism in like a very blinkers on, this is the only thing I care about, which is important. And I agree.
And I mean, I think it doesn't need to be like something super monumental, or you know, it's like I say this, like, you need all kinds of people, of activists. Like, we're all activists, you know. Everyone is an activist. And if you actively do something, if you actively believe in something and your actions match how you think, then, you know, that is what it is. And then, you know, you could be the person showing up at the marches, you know, or you could be like, I talk about this with the vegan community. We have like, you know, vegans who are like, who make like super graphic content and they put it out there, and you know, and then there are the vegans who are like, hey, look, I made this something to eat, and this is, you know, like they're the people who show up at the marches, they're the people who write the books, they're the people who make the video. You eat all kinds. So whatever you do, it's good. It's important to actively in your actions support how you think.
No, I mean, I feel like I definitely agree. I think intersectional activism is a conversation I think everybody is having right now. I think it's one of those things, whenever someone talks about one issue, they're like, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? And there's no way to kind of like talk about one thing without someone piping up and saying, this is also a problem. Like, this, everything, exactly what you said, everything is connected and everything.
That's cool. Like, I hate this, but what about...
But what aboutism is,
it's so annoying. And now
it's very annoying. It's not helpful. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't fix anything.
Exactly. I think it's, and this is the thing, you know, do what you need to do and let, you know, whoever, like this happens, like when I write about something, you know, on Instagram, or like I post something and something, but what about this or what about that? Or where were you when this was happening.
Like, you can't talk about everything and everything all the time. There's always something going on.
You need to focus. Like, I used to also think about this. Like, we were talking earlier about, like, doing many things at one time, you know? And I used to pride myself on multitasking. I was like, oh, my God, I'm the most amazing multitasker in the world. I hate multitasking now. Like, I want to do one thing at a time. It doesn't match what I said about, like, you know, when I'm nothing playing a game at the same time. But that's stupid shit. Like, the important things, like, I want to do, like, one thing at a time. And then, as long as I'm giving it my focus, you know, and I can do 10 different things. But when I do that one thing at a time and I give it my 100%, I think that's really the most important thing. Like, showing up and doing your best, you know,
yeah,
what it is.
I mean, yeah, exactly, whatever it is. I mean, I feel like that's really shown in your career. You've had such an amazing, long career, and it's been so cool to see. I mean, you've also had experience working in South Asian cinema and Indian cinema as well. What was that like, and stepping into that kind of huge, big entertainment industry that it is?
It was totally by accident, and I was there, you know, and then things were happening, and I just kind of went along. There was never a plan to really do it. I was coming from like a rock and roll background, so I never really 100% connected, you know, with what was happening in the industry, and I can't like. I don't know how to network, you know, or do like, I'm happy to meet people and, you know, to interact with people. I can't do it with an agenda, and I can't, like, I am who I am. Mm-hmm. And I have gotten into a lot of trouble over the years, saying what I think.
Yeah.
I think it's been interesting. I always felt like I had one foot in and one foot out. And I used to say, like, oh, I haven't been influenced by the way that the industry thinks, because I, you know, or how things are done, because I was never really like, you know, like I did my job. I worked super hard at what I was doing, and then I showed up, like, I gave it my 100%. But the rest of the stuff, like all the peripheral, you know, like, oh, you need to go to events and you need to dress this way and you need to, like, all of that stuff. I was like, what? But I realized it was kind of like a slap in my face. I had been programmed, like, in some sense by the way that, you know, the industry actually functions. And it took me almost like a year. First, I had to realize that that had happened. After I realized that that was the case, because I'm like, oh, I have one foot in and one foot out, but that wasn't, you know. Then I had to unlearn everything that I had learned to have a kind of a different approach. But having said that, there are some really amazing people. You know, there are things that you learn, like, you know, about, like, work ethic and about. I feel like it can push you to understand, like, how far you can go, and it can show you a mirror as well. So it was an interesting. It has been quite an interesting time for me. I was just going with the flow, along for the ride.
Right place, right time.
Yeah.
Then what exactly prompted you then to kind of like pivot? I mean, you said you had one foot out the door already, but like, yeah, prompted you to pivot to kind of more focus on producing and take a very different kind of approach?
I think I started to, I've talked about it so much. I call it Bhanumati ka Pitara, just Pandora's box, essentially, in the Desi version. And I at some point, I started to, all my songs, all of the stuff that I used to write when I was younger was all about heartbreak. And so, oh my God, heartbreak is the worst thing, you know, that happened to me. I started to pay attention to what was happening around me. And once I opened that box, it was like, oh my God. Like,
and everything just went to shit.
And of course I wouldn't have it any other way, but it put me in this place where I started to question everything, you know. And it was really about, like, what do I stand for, and the work that I'm doing, the life that I'm doing, does it align with what I stand for? You know, it's like, it's really simple things. Like, for example, if I say, like, oh, you know, like, I love animals and I, you know, like, I don't want to support animal cruelty, but then I'm promoting a brand of makeup that tests on animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I can't. I physically can't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to feel that I wasn't really... I didn't belong because my belief system didn't allow me to be in this place where I couldn't ask for lyrics before. Like if a big music director is calling you, you gotta be like, hi, send me the lyrics first. And let me
I want to screen and make sure there's no problems.
Yeah. If all the lyrics are above warden, then I'll show up. Because I can't be like, how can I feel the way that I do about, like, you know, like the position of women in the world today, and then sing a song that objectifies women. You know, it does not work. And it was really the beginning of the end.
That makes sense.
It took a couple of years for me to actually like cut the cord, but mm-hmm. yeah.
No, but you had some solid hits.
Yeah.
Solid hits while you were there.
Yeah.
And then now, even this new era, it's so amazing. Like, Elisa and I were texting before, we were like,
just so cool.
We're a bit nervous, but no, I think it really does show, I think, at least, even to someone who's just like a listener or like the audience, when an artist moves towards a more genuine, so, like, maybe it's just minor and I'm just trying shit, but like, I think it's a little bit, you notice their joy or their story, whatever that is, more genuine, and it comes through. And then kind of to wrap it up, because I know we've been yapping for a good almost an hour. What we kind of wanted to ask you for us, but then also everyone listening, is what are you most excited for this year? Is there something big coming up that you're allowed to talk about as well? But yeah, what do you hope
2024
to first year?
Life has changed a lot in the last 2 years. I don't know where I live anymore. You know, I've been spending some time in Spain, some time in Bombay, some time in Goa. And I actually really don't know.
No, but great honesty.
No, it's true, because I lived all of my life going with the flow. Super easy. Takes all the responsibility off me. And then, off of me. And then a friend told me, in 2015, I remember this like 10 years ago. And this is another thing that everyone that I know I've said this to. And it's like something that I like live my life by. It's called Dynamic Structure for Limitless Flow.
Wow.
It's amazing. So
sounds scientific.
So it means that that structure is important. You know, you need to spend the time and think about what you really want, and then try and design how you would like to get there. And that's your structure. So you have a structure, so you're not flowing all over the place, you know? You're like, there's a direction that you're flowing in. But the structure is dynamic, which means that you can pivot at any time. You can change it at any time. And I think that the last 2 years have been like more than ever about this for me. So I have this like general outline of like, yeah, I'm going to put out some more music. I have a couple of labels that I'm working with, that I'm going to release music with. I'm gonna work hard, and I'm gonna do what like I have what's in my control, which is to make music,
mm-hmm.
and play music, and I'm gonna take it one step at a time.
Yeah, whatever's gonna happen is going to happen, and I'm sure we're gonna see a lot of cool new stuff from you this year. A lot of success, we hope and pray and everything for you. But yeah, I think that's about it for us. I mean, why don't you go ahead and you can tell people where to find you, socials, everything. And you know.
I'm on Instagram as Kisnuka. I have a YouTube page, which I really don't, but it's like a place for all the music videos that I've made. And I think that they're if someone wants to know who I am, that's a pretty clear picture of who I am. Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, that's it. My, and the music is online everywhere.
Yeah, amazing. Wow. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today. Hopefully we did not take up too much of your time.
And everything you've kind of been saying, I've literally been noting down as like advice and pieces of things to think about, which is exciting.
I printed out, put it on my wall.
Yeah, but nice. And hopefully we'll get to see you in person very soon.
And you're found like at the gigs and
everything. Yes, yes. Yeah. Hopefully
we'll see you in there.
Okay. And hopefully to see you and
Ryan.
But thank you so much for your time and your very thoughtful answers and being so honest and real with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening today, guys. I hope you enjoyed our little brand of nonsense, our usual brand of nonsense. But if you want to see more of us online, you can check us out on Instagram on pardesi.community. If you want to email us directly, we are podcast.pardesi@gmail.com. If you want to check out our Twitter, it's pardesi blog. And if you want to have a little sneak peek at Kate Key and I's little bios on our website, it's www.pardesi.community/thelinebetween. Hope you guys had fun. See you next time.
Bye.